Hey guys, are you looking for a sports book that you can trust? Well, look no further than mybookie.ag, where you can get a 50% match on your initial deposit of up to $1,000 when you use promo code DFSArmy. As a bonus, when you use promo code DFSArmy, you also get a free month of DFSArmy VIP and DFSArmy Beat the Bookie membership. That's a $100 combined value. So we'll help you with your daily fantasy sports, and we'll help you with your handicapping free when you sign up for mybookie.ag using promo code DFSArmy.
In 2015, an elite DFS Army commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Hello and welcome to the Taco Tuesday PGA DFS podcast, presented to you by DFSArmy.com. Here at DFS Army, we cover almost every daily fantasy sport there is, and we've got a lot of great tools and content available. They're covering it all. They were just covering the All-Star Game and the Home Run Derby. You can check us out at DFSArmy.com. And use promo code TACO to help support the pod. We've got the Domination Station Lineup Optimizer, the Research Station, which I'll be referencing throughout this podcast, and Coach's Notes, Coaching Channels, lots of good stuff that you can use not only for PGA DFS content, but again, almost all daily fantasy sports with one low price. Come check us out at DFSArmy.com and use promo code TACO for a lifetime 20% off. Alright, so this week we are going to Iowa for the John Deere Classic. Just keeping it rolling with the new Midwest swing. Yeah, this used to be a bit later in the year, towards the very end of the season. Of course, we are approaching the end of the season as they've kind of shortened the season a little bit this year. You usually would have stops like the Greenbrier and a few other events before this one. So it's going to be very similar to the last few weeks. The course plays very, very easy, as over the last nine runnings of this tournament, we've seen scores between minus 18 and minus 27 winning it all. That was last year with Michael Kim, winning at minus 27. Steve Stricker won it, 26 under par. It's a shame we don't get Stricker in the field this week, as he would be the ultimate course horse. He won this event three times in a row, but he's not in it. A lot of people aren't in it. This is probably the weakest field that I have ever seen. I've maybe seen some weaker fields during like the week of a major or a WGC event, like the alternate fields, like a like the Corrales Punta Canas or the Puerto Rico Open, or even the weirder stuff like the Barracuda. But this is just a completely empty field. None of the top 50 in the world are playing. A lot of people are over there in Scotland getting ready for the Scottish Open. I got big guys like Fowler and Stenson. They've been in Europe over the last few weeks, the bigger guys. I know over the last 2 weeks the fields have been pretty weak, but this one is especially weak as players are getting ready for the British Open next week. And one of them is a guy that's supposed to play in the field, one of the top five in salary this week, Kevin Streelman. Check this out. John Daly was denied the use of a golf cart for the British Open, so he withdrew. Not allowed Streelman to get in. So he's like, screw this, I'm out. I'm withdrawing from the John Deere Classic, heading on out to Europe. So good for Streelman. He's been playing pretty well. But this field has just gotten extremely weak. Because that was one of the best players available, actually, if you can even believe that. Kevin Streelman. What do I have to say? I mean, the top three in pricing, Matthew Wolf, Colin Morikawa, and Victor Hovland are all rookies that have very, very limited starts, you know, just got their tour card. They have a combined, like, 16 starts between the three of them, and those are the guys above 10K. You've also got Joaquin Neiman at 10,200, another rookie. He's been playing a little bit longer than those guys have, but it's really indicative of just how weak this field is. This is a truly super, super weak field. So just like over the last 2 weeks, we're going to have the key field rank splits as easy courses and weak fields. But it's not exactly the same as the 3M Open and the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Especially like the Rocket Mortgage Classic. That was a very, very, very flat course with wide fairways. This is kind of the opposite. This is a very, very hilly course. That's one of the main things used to describe this course. Very hilly, very uniquely designed, but it's also very easy. It's extremely penal if you miss it into these deep forests they've got. There's also a little bit of water in play on four holes. For example, hole 16, it's a short 150-yard par 5, or par 3. 150-yard par 5 would get destroyed for some albatrosses all the time, but... You know, this is a very easy very easy hole. It's got a bunker on the right, but if you dare miss left, it goes from green to fringe to rough to side of a hill to cart path, and then water. So if you dare miss it left, you're gonna find some water. One of the par fives. You know, there are three par fives at this par 71 course. One of the par fives is completely protected by water. Hole 10. You know, it's a unique designed course where, you know, the fairways are very thin. They're winding all over the place. You know, there's lots of elevation differences in between where you're teeing off and where the green is. You've got a drivable par 4, hole 14, 350 yards, but the green is like 50 yards underneath your feet. You can just roll it down there. We've seen some people... hit the green, but it's extremely hard to. Again, I can't stress enough how thin and just oddly shaped these fairways are. Most of the time, people are going to be hitting some sort of iron off of the tee. There's some holes like hole 6, where, you know, it's a 364-yard par 4, and, you know, it seems like it'd be a nice one that you could, you know, drive most of the distance to and hit a little wedge in, but the fairway only goes 250 yards, and then, you know, we've got a drop-off between the fairway and the green, and it's all just some real harsh rough, so you have to lay it up. There's no option. You can't go for it. If you're a crazy person, you can try to hit the cart path and make it that way, but it's not going to happen. So everyone has to take a layup on that. Driving distance really, really doesn't matter, because most of the times you are just hitting... Yeah, they're not very long holes for the most part, and even the longer ones are just really simple to understand. You know, there's a reason these guys tear it up. It's just a lot of the advantage that you would get from being very aggressive is taken away here. And we've seen guys like, you know, Stricker, Zach Johnson, you know, even guys like Ryan Moore, you know, just have a ton of success here. And they're not the long bombers, that is for sure. It's not even necessarily accuracy, too. It's just, you know, it really takes the skill out of, you know, being able to just bomb the ball and put it more into just, you know, place a really good drive. You know, just hit a no-nonsense drive. Just be consistent with it. And then hit a wedge into the green. And from there, the greens are just really large. They're very undulating, but they're pretty easy to read. There's some slower bent grass greens. And... they're not the most complicated to figure out. It's very obvious usually where you should be landing your ball at. You know, it's very slopey greens, but again, it's kind of easy to understand what you're going for. This has tended to be a bit of, not really a putting fest, but we've seen putting factor into, you know, fantasy point scoring and finishes more than around the green, which is a little bit unusual. Usually that's a more important stat, but... you know, we have seen some very, very good putters win and do well here. Jordan Spieth has won here multiple times when he was a top 10 in the world in putting. Steve Stricker, again, you know, the king of this course, and everyone knows he's an amazing putter. Ryan Moore's won here. Brian Harman's won here. Michael Kim also just rode a hot putter to his amazing win. You know, as far as determining the winner, usually it's going to be who has a really, really hot putter that week. But, you know, as far as tee to green, I think a lot of people are overrating the amount that strokes gained approach goes into it. I was 30th out of like 40-some courses in, you know, correlation between season-long strokes gained approach and fantasy point scoring at this event. We actually saw strokes gained off the tee factor in a lot, but not driving distance or accuracy, just strokes gained off the tee. On total driving, good drive percentage, those would be really good ones to look at here. Just who doesn't mess up their drives? And again, this is a course where driving distance is taken off the table. We've only seen one winner, and that was Bryson DeChambeau since 2010, who was in the top 50 that year in driving distance. We saw, you know, Zach Johnson win here, was 168th that year. Ryan Moore was 150th that year. Stricker, 134th that year. Last year, Michael Kim was 153rd on the PGA Tour in driving distance. It's mostly going to be, you know, hitting your greens regulation, just no nonsense tee to green stuff, and then after that, it's a bit of a putting fest. The greens are bigger, so strokes gained around the green isn't going to matter much. And honestly, a lot of the greens, you know, they might have some really large bunkers or something, but it's very, very slopy, and there are a lot of bowl, you know, type greens where you just miss the green, you're going out in the forest, and you're not going to have a good time. You know, there's some very, very, very thick shrubbery. Going to be a lot of unplayable calls, you know, but for the most part, the greens are gigantic, easy to find, and the holes are pretty straightforward. It kind of forces your hand a lot of the time, and again, you can't really be too aggressive here and expect that to work out. It's just not going to usually. So as far as the type of player that we're going to target, it's just different this week. Strategy is just completely different because there's like no one to pay for, right? So salary is almost out the window, especially if you're going to be off of the guys up top, the young guys in pretty good form, Hovland, Morikawa, last week's winner, Wolf, Joaquin Niemann. If you're going to be off those guys strategically, because people are just going to end up playing them, because, you know, as weird as this field is, there's no one to really pay up for up top. There's no, you know, salary might not really matter all that much. You might leave some money on the table, and that's not something that usually happens in PGA. You usually don't do that too much, but you know, the guys 10K, almost 11K in pricing. Usually we see these guys at, you know, between like 6-1, 7-1, and maybe 15-1 or so. But you know, Hovland's 18-1, Morikawa's 19-1, Wolf 23-1. You know, Niemann same thing. It's just way different than we're used to seeing. The guys that are priced up probably should be priced up. Honestly, there are just so few options, and that's going to be something I'm repeating throughout this podcast. There are just so few options this week. You got to find someone to play, and you've also got to realize that a person's expectations, you know, if they're usually finishing like say T50 at a normal event, they're likely to finish like T40 here, or even like T30. You know, just, you've got to shift some expectations, because this is pretty much a web.com event. It's a very, very weak field. I think we'll see mediocre golfers looking like, you know, much better golfers than they are, just because the field is incredibly weak. Who knows who's going to win? We've seen a lot of guys just come out of nowhere and win, like last year, obviously, with Michael Kim. And it really does give those veterans, older guys, and another thing we've noticed is people who've seen the course multiple times tend to do better at the course than your first timers. Always some exceptions to that, but course history really does seem to factor in a bit more than usual. In fact, I would say this is one of the courses where I look at course history the most, because there are, you know, so many examples of guys They continually do well. But there's also no one that's safe. You know, it is going to be a scoring fest. Variance is going to be up, and there are some big numbers to be had. If you, you know, end up on the wrong side of some variance, or you just hit one or two errant shots that could add, we do see a lot of triple and or double, triple, or even worse, bogeys, you know, at this place. But not so much, regular bogeys. If you keep things in line, it's an extremely easy course. And again, there'll be some scoring just like we've seen from these weak events at easy courses, high scoring courses that we've seen over the last 2 weeks. And a lot of the same people are playing. You know, these are just your PGA Tour regulars, either trying desperately to score some sort of finish and keep their PGA Tour card, or maybe just trying to make some money before their card eventually runs out. Or just, young guys working on taking advantage of a weak field like this. But all of your regulars, the ones who play pretty much every week, are here. Like, obviously, Sungjae Im's going to be here. It's those kind of guys. Not really a web.com tour event, but one where, your average golfer that wouldn't really have a shot with studs in the field, they all of a sudden have a shot to definitely do something here. A lot of people that need wins are going to show up and, try here. But if they have any chance of getting in the British Open, they're going to be doing that instead. Like, this is an annoying sort of course, I guess. For some reason, nobody is playing it. Not even Spieth, who's won it multiple times. Just seems like with the new schedule, the schedule switching around and making the majors closer together, they'd rather just take the week off and rest, or go to Europe where the events are stronger and they're going to be more relevant to the British Open coming up. Looking at this field, just going to do the top several in pricing. Usually I do the 10K and above in the free section. You guys lost one. I think Streelman is 10,100, so I'll go a little bit deeper into the field. You get to at least Zach Johnson, because that's important here. Before going into the VIP deep dive in through the field, starting off with Victor Hovland, who has been pretty solid over the last 4 weeks since he got his tour card. Again, he was a low amateur at the Masters. He did start off the year missing the cut at the Mayakoba Classic and the Farmers Insurance Open. So unlike Morikawa, we've actually seen his downside. But he's one of the top young up and coming golfers. Was one of the best in college recently. Him and Wolf, very comparable. I noticed, and I think a lot of people noticed last week, that Hovland was like 25-1 and Wolf was like 150-1 on some sites, which was crazy, which, got a lot of people betting on Matthew Wolf. And, congratulations to whoever hit that. I know a lot of people made some good money with him winning last week, but it was kind of crazy to see how, the insane discrepancy between Wolf and Hovland, just because Wolf had missed his first two cuts on the PGA Tour, his last two. He did debut at the Waste Management Phoenix Open, finishing 50th, but since getting his card, he had missed those cuts, and Hovland had finished like 12th at the U.S. Open, then 54th at the Travelers, then T13 at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. That was enough to make him 25-1 with Wolf 150-1. It didn't really add up. Wolf's going to be something really nice here, but so Hovland, $10,900 is what he's drifted up to 17-1 right now. You got to think to fade that, because people are going to be playing a lot of them, especially on like FanDuel. There's nowhere else to really, pick guys from, and there are some really good values in like the 7K range, and I think that'll open up, people to throw in one of these expensive guys. I think most people will go Morikawa, just because he has yet to have a miscut or anything, and he's making a ton of birdies. But Hovland is someone that, we've seen him get popular. Like, he was extremely popular last week at the 3M Open, even with a huge price jump. So we expect him to probably find some ownership again, because he followed, he had his third top 13 finish over the last 4 weeks. Had finished 13th at the Rocket Mortgage Classic and followed that up with 13th last week. You probably expect him to still retain some ownership I'm just not really interested in, it's not really the price. It is just that ownership I'm trying to get away from. Still a very young golfer. We don't know that he is, you know, going to be the next Tiger Woods already. More than likely willing to just hope that he, you know, finishes outside like the top 15, top 20, and he won't really hurt you that way. I'd be more interested in Morikawa. So he's $10,700. Pretty popular last week, and boy, did he pay off. Runner-up to Wolf. He ended up like 19 under or something like that. The thing is, he's just been gaining tons of birdies to the field. If you look at the birdies gained to the field stats, almost everyone's in this field is negative. Because, again, this is like the lower half of every field in an event, just stretched out to make an entire field full of losers. So he's one of the few guys that actually gains birdies in the four events he's played, and he's gained 4.7 birdies to the field on average. That's over double the next closest person, which is Hovland. Again, low sample sizes for them all, but Morikawa has just been a birdie scoring machine. If you look in the showdown tools, I think the percentage of times he comes in the top 25% of fields in scoring, showdown fantasy point scoring, is 56% of the time, 81% of the time is in the top 50%, just considerably better than anyone else in this field. I think he's going to be popular, but you know, I like just picking one of the three guys up top, and it's definitely going to be Morikawa for me, just with all the birdies to be made, and this is definitely a birdie scoring event. I also avoids double bogeys. More than Hovland, especially more than Wolf, who can get in trouble with that, just from what we've seen. So Morikawa would be the way I'd go up top. He's, you know, been gaining tons of strokes approach, you know, almost double what Hovland and Wolf have done over the last 10 rounds, gaining a stroke per round over the last 25 rounds approach. It's pretty decent off the tee. I think Hovland's got him beat there. But Hovland has struggled, you know, with his short game around the green and putting, as where Morikawa has been pretty solid in that, very consistent, just from, you know, what rounds we've seen of him so far. So yeah, Morikawa is the guy I'm going with there. And then Matthew Wolf, $10,500, last week's winner. The very, very interesting swing. That was his first made cut on the PGA Tour also, we found out. He had a win as his first made cut. I wonder how many people have done that. So obviously has winning upside. It's similar to Morikawa. He's got winning upside, especially in this field. You know, hits the ball a mile, but that's really going to be negated here. Has shown some really poor driving accuracy. Only hitting 51% of fairways in the last three events he's played over the last 3 weeks. You know, losing strokes off the tee, actually, which, you know, for someone that hits the ball, like, well over 300 yards, it's a little concerning. You know, obviously, last week, the approaches were on fire. If we look at the strokes gained settings, or the strokes gained logs, you can see, you know, the last two rounds, over the weekend, he gained 4.2 and 3 strokes approach. Really, really good stuff there. But on Sunday, he lost 2 strokes putting. And he had come in, you know, gaining strokes in four straight rounds, putting. You know, so that's kind of inconsistent. Like, a lot of people are very inconsistent with their putter. But at least he does have some upside in that regard. You know, we've seen him gain as many as 2 strokes in a round so far putting. But it was nice to see his approach game. He gained at least a stroke every single round last week. Gained, I think it was like 8 or 9 strokes overall approach, and that was something that he struggled with in his 2 missed cuts early on, you know, the weeks before that. So Wolf, not going to full fade him, really just going to be seriously underweight on these guys. Might take some sprinkles because they can definitely win. All three of these guys can show or have shown that, you know, especially on a field like this, they've got upside for people so young, but mostly just going to be avoiding these guys. Wolf has lost birdies to the field so far. You know, those missed cuts don't really help, but half of his rounds over the last 3 weeks have been in that win. So, you know, not so great to see that, but still just have a sprinkle of him And that's probably how I'll go about it. And you've got Joaquin Niemann, or Joaquin Niemann, $10,200. Played in this event last year. Debuted with a T23 finish. And he had a T23 finish last week at the 3M Open. That was after two straight fifth-place finishes in a row at the Travelers and Rocket Mortgage Classic. So he's come in making six straight cuts. He had a real rough stretch to the season before that, missing the cut at places like the PGA Championship in Texas, Corrales Punta Cana, right? The super, super weak field of Corrales Punta Cana. He finished T103. That's a bit worrisome right there. I think he makes for a pretty good fade candidate. He's avoiding double bogeys at a really similar rate to like Morikawa. And, you know, he's gaining fantasy points to the field. Not birdies, but fantasy points. And, you know, over his last six events played, 86% field rank is really strong. And he's gaining strokes approach as well. Around the green, also been solid in that. And, you know, he started off as being a really bad putter early on this season. Like, he's a really, really bad putter most of the time. Over the last 10 rounds, he's actually putted pretty darn well, 0.7 strokes gained to the field. Just exactly zero over the last 25, so he's just been an average putter. I don't know how much I like him in what, you know, may be a putting fest, at least if you're, you know, shooting for a top 5, top 10 finish. I'm not sure how Niemann fits in that, but he proved he can at least have a good finish last week, or last year at this event. I'm just worried that he's going to be really, really popular, especially on FanDuel. He's going to be quite chalky on FanDuel. He's a bit underpriced there. You know, he's been really popular in ownership over the last few weeks, and he's been hitting for guys. I don't really think that, you know, I'm going to be eating that sort of chalk. You know, someone who's 22-1, 23-1, for over $10,000, that's not all that appealing to me, honestly. So, you know, I've mostly just been saying I'm fading guys, but that's really what I'm doing up top. I'm picking just other guys and going with them. Not too worried about salary this week. So a core play from last week that, you know, I'm kind of worried about putting him in as a core play, coming in off some missed cuts and really bad finishes consecutively. But Lucas Glover, boy, did he have a Sunday. He went 9-under on Sunday with the world's hottest putter. So you've got Glover, who, you know, $9,800 is very overpriced. Kind of the reason I liked him last week, and it's going to be sort of the reason I like him this week as well. He's coming in overpriced, which for me is fine. I've got to spend my salary somewhere if I even spend my salary. On FanDuel, though, you're going to really have to pay up for him, as he's the fourth most expensive on the board. $9,800 on DraftKings. So he did hit last week, and he's had so many top 15s, top 20s this year. It's been insane. He's either missing the cut or he's, you know, coming like top 20. And it seems like he specifically really, really likes these easy courses and weak fields. His field rank splits are astronomical in these. He's played 7 events at easy courses with a 92% field rank split. So he beats 92% of the golfers he tees off with. And then in 11 weak field events, he has the same field rank percentage of 92%. So he's beaten 92% of the golfers he's teed up against in 11 weak field events this year. It's probably a lot worse for stronger fields. Like the US Open, he missed the cut. You know, he did actually do very well in the PGA Championship. But, you know, it's these weak fields, easy courses, that's where he's been able to put in his work so far this season. It was very low owned last week and should be the lowest owned of these expensive guys up top, because I imagine M and Johnson that I'm about to talk about will also be very popular. Glover just seems overpriced, which he is. He's not a good odds to pricing value, being 25-1, with guys like Sungjae M at 22-1 cheaper than him, but I don't mind that at all. I'm going purely for ownership here, and I think he has really good upside for like a top 10 finish. So I like Glover. I think he's going to be a core play again. Just going right back to the well with him. And, you know, over the last few months, 0.9% double bogey or worse percentage. That's one of the best in the entire field. I think it's top 3 in the field. Very good at avoiding them. It's just really safe. you know, used to struggle at this course in 2015, 2014, missed the cut pretty horribly. That was back when he was struggling with being literally the worst putter on the PGA Tour by a mile. But if you look, over the last 25 rounds, he averages half a stroke gained per round. On bent grass greens also, 0.5 strokes gained per round putting. Has been really hot. And again, you know, last week, I don't know if you believe in, like, you know, trendy drivers, or not drivers, putters, but he gained 5.3 strokes putting on Sunday. He was lightning hot. He was ultra hot. I don't know what kind of adjective I need to use, but super hot. And, you know, he got over those missed cuts, came 25th here in 2017, the last time he played. He's a much different golfer than him. He has, you know, has a completely different putting swing now. He's completely changed everything about how he putted. I think he experimented with, like, anchoring and stuff, and now I think he putts, like, with his hands farther ahead. So, like, he almost, like, semi-anchors it or something. It's kind of weird, but it's really been working for him. And I like to see putting, you know, having that sort of putting capability at what possibly will be a putting fest, at least for the guys, you know, in the top 10 going for the win there. Everything else, you know, pretty no-nonsense. The strokes gained approach hasn't been great lately, but off the tee is always very solid, very consistent. You know, every single stroke gained category we see for him, it's been really consistent. That's been the main thing. So don't mind Glover here. Really like him, actually, for GPPs. Definitely not cash safe, but for GPPs, definitely. Third in projected round score. We can look at the specific splits, too. He's fourth in the field in long par 3 scoring, and three of the four par 3s here are long. He's third in medium length par 4 scoring, and 13th in short par 5 scoring. Two of the three par 5s are short. The longer one is the one that is protected by water, guaranteed to be a three shot hole, and he's eighth in the field in long par 5 scoring. Very good at, you know, getting DraftKings points. You know, better DraftKings, or a better FanDuel play than DraftKings play usually, but you know, still solid at finding fantasy points. Not exactly birdie scoring, but he does have you know, he's really just really good at avoiding the double bogeys, and it's what makes him such a good FanDuel play. That and the fact that no one will own him, which again is what I'm really going for with the play here. You've got Sungjae Im at $9,700. He's finished T21 or better in his last four events. You know, he got over a little streak of three straight missed cuts that he had at the Wells Fargo, Byron Nelson, and PGA Championship. The Byron Nelson, the PGA Championship, and the Charles Schwab Invitational. Since then, he hasn't missed a cut. Gets a lot of birdies. You know, I think he's like top five in the field and gaining birdies to the field. Really good at gaining fantasy points to the field. Top five in that as well. One thing I do notice about him in particular, it's his, what was it, we were just on that page. Fifth in short par five scoring. Really good there. Struggles a bit more at long par fives, but that should be really negated this week. And sixth in the field in long par 4 scoring. So no need to worry about him there. The only real struggle he has is he's much better at the short par 3s than the long par 3s. And you see some longer ones here where he really does struggle at. Only 0.3 DraftKings points per hole on long par 3s. But, you know, he's still, you know, those that short par 5 scoring is going to be a lot more important than some par 3 splits. Short par 5 is gonna be where you're making your money, and he's really gotten some eagles lately. You know, and always an amazing showdown play, and even for week long, you know, he's shown that he can score a ton. You know, and for a birdie fest, this is definitely what you want. He's been pretty solid with the putter, no real weaknesses honestly. He's kind of struggling with his stroke scanned approach recently, but turned that around. So. Really like Sungjae, but I think he'll be a fairly popular play. Ownership might be lowered a little bit by being right next to Zach Johnson, and we'll get to him, but he should still be somewhat popular. And I don't mind eating a little bit of chalk there. I don't, I you know, I really want to get some Sungjae in my lineups and probably try to be higher than the rest of the field on him. Glover and M and Johnson, those are the three that I'm really spending up on. Just not venturing into the 10K range this week. So let's talk about Zach Johnson before we go into our deep dive here. Obviously, he is the course horse. Goes without saying. He's made all of his cuts since 2010. No finish worse than T34. And six top five finishes and a win in that span. You know, last year, he regressed at this course by posting a T16 finish. Now, the thing all of those years have in common is that he came in some pretty good form. I think he had some top 20s in a row last year before he posted that T16. And, you know, it's true that he really, really likes the course, knows what to do here, has a lot of confidence here, but he's been struggling this year. This has been his worst year in a very, very long time. Might be one of his worst years ever. Has no top 10s. You have to go all the way back to the RSM Classic. Yeah, that was before, you know, the Tournament of Champions and stuff. That was literally last year where he had his last top 10, a T7 finish there in that weak field. And only one top 20 finish since then, T16 at the RBC Heritage, which is a fairly similar course and setup and stuff here. But we've seen him miss the cut at the Charles Schwab, the Wells Fargo. He missed the cut by a stroke. He's made his last two cuts, but no solid finishes. Get this, he's 19th in projected round score, but 81st in projected DraftKings score. All that aside, though, that intense course history. I mean, we're usually just on this guy a lot. Should be higher in price, I think, just because of that insane history. I don't know, this is going to be one of the spots where I'll probably just eat the history, even though he's losing, you know, birdies to the field on average, and even starting to double bogey, which is not like him. His double bogey worst percentage is over 2%. I think, honestly, it makes for a really good fade if you want to play him that way. I'm not really going to. I'm focusing my fades more on the young guys and just taking, you know, the solid Zach Johnson. And, you know, at least what he doesn't do is he doesn't really miss cuts. You know, he's missed some cuts this year, but I think in the last decade, he's only missed consecutive cuts in a row once in that entire span. Just a very, very good cut maker. With the weak field, I don't think he'll have an issue making the cut here. I don't think that's going to happen. It could. I've seen crazier things happen, but that would be one of the craziest things. If he were to miss the cut. But you know, we've seen Luke Donald miss the cut at the RBC Heritage. We've seen KJ Choi miss the cut at the Genesis Open. So these sort of things do happen after a while. I don't know if Zach Johnson's Day of Reckoning is coming yet. Yeah, I think he's just really safe. So like in cash games, I'm going to play him there in cash games. Just use him as a filler piece in GPP. Just know that probably better on FanDuel than DraftKings because he really does struggle with, you know, high-end birdie making. But, you know, obviously he's done that before in the past. He's, you know, put up scores of like when he won here is minus 20, minus 21, 2014, minus 19, minus 19. You know, he's put up some really, really low scores in the past. Let's just see if he can... Yeah, you know, I'd expect him more to finish like T20 or something. That's more of his upside than like T5, I think. But who knows with him, really? Yeah, so that'll do it for the free part of this podcast. If you want to check out the rest of this podcast and get access to all of our tools, articles, coaching channels, and the coaches' notes, which really breaks down what you should be doing for each slate really easily if you don't have a lot of time. Check this out at dfsarmy.com and use promo code TACO on sign up for a lifetime 20% off. I will see you guys next week, and for you VIP guys, just hang tight.